Hi, friends! Join us as we dive into the themes, metaphors, and foreshadowing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We are your hosts, Leah,
Sarah,
Tabby,
and whether you're a new viewer or a longtime fan, welcome to Becoming Buffy.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to our first Scooby Secrets of Season 5. Wow, that is so many S's. Today, we are talking about the spoilers for Buffy versus Dracula. And oh my goodness, I have not been so excited for a spoiler section in forever, simply because there is so much to talk about. The first episode of a new season is always really fun because there's a lot of foreshadowing. There's a lot of buildup for character arcs and all sorts of things that are going to happen in the season and in the seasons beyond. But first and foremost, how do you guys feel that this season opener holds up in comparison to, let's see, we have Bargaining Part 1 and Part 2 in Season 6. And then we have, what's the opener for Season 7?
Oh, it's
It literally was on the tip of my tongue. I cannot remember it now.
Lessons?
Yeah. Lessons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we have Bargaining and we have Lessons. I used to think this was the weakest season opener, and I think I've been I think I'm wrong. What do you guys think?
I think it's the weakest season opener. It's just like a little, it doesn't give as much as the other ones do.
It's hard because even if we have a crappy season, we tend to have really good openers. And Season 5 is a great season, and it's arguably one of, or if so, the weakest opener out of all of them, which is ironic.
I was just going to say, I think that there's just too much going on in this episode. And I think that it's just kind of like, Dracula makes the show feel like the Buffy movie to me. Like, it just...
Yeah.
It just takes me out of it. It's so, like, into, like, vampire lore that doesn't really align with normal Buffy lore. So it kind of almost takes me out of the show. It's a weird place for Buffy. I don't know. And then it's, like, then putting Donna... Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this episode, but it doesn't feel like it's done in, like... Because every opener has a lot. But it's like to the point where I like come out of it being like, oh, there was a lot in that episode. Like, it just kind of was like all over the place.
I think I like Buffy versus Dracula better than when she was bad. And I think I definitely like it better than Bargaining. Bargaining is a hard episode for me to watch. We'll talk about it when we get there. I don't want to like give too much away. Not only is it hard to watch, but I don't think it's written as well. But I do agree with you, Leah, and I think you comparing it to the Buffy movie is like spot on. I think that's probably the perfect analogy, because Dracula is by far the weakest element of this episode. And for a season that is so heavy and so like not – it is kind of dark, but it's emotionally weighty in so many ways. This episode is very campy. And so – it doesn't have a good feel for what is going into or what the themes are going to be for the rest of the season, even though there's a lot of like foreshadowing and other stuff like that. Versus I feel like Anne gave a really, really great taste of what the rest of the season was going to be like. But maybe that's just all of the season openers with the exception of Bargaining. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I think I enjoyed it more than I realized, but I don't know. I'd have to like go back and watch all the openers and figure out if it's my favorite or if I think it's like, or not my favorite, figure out if I think it's the weakest or not.
I haven't seen them in a long time, so it's hard for me to like really kind of like gauge them to the rest, because I feel like like 1 through 5 season openers I know really, really well and I could rank those. But I feel like I could picture Bargaining a lot more than I can picture Lessons in my head. So I'm not sure. I remember really liking Lessons, but I have no idea.
Lessons to me is one of the stronger season openers. It's fantastic. It's probably better than about a third of that season, which is a shame because it starts off so well.
Well, the first like 7 episodes of Season 7 is great.
So good. Yeah, it's very, very good. And then it just kind of continues to go downhill. There's a couple good episodes in there, but yeah. But anyway, we'll get to it when we get to it. All right. So my question for you guys, for starting off, there was a lot of foreshadowing in this episode, a lot. Which one of the things that is touched on or talked about briefly in this episode makes you the most excited for season five? Like, what are you most excited to talk about for this season?
I think I'm most excited to talk about Dawn. We've been waiting so long to talk about Dawn, and she's finally here. And oh my gosh, Dawn is the curveball that I think no one saw coming. And people hate on her so much, but she adds such an interesting dynamic to every single character. Like, she really does. And I love Dawn. I think that she's annoying and bratty, and she grows and she's like, but I love that for her. Like, I love that they went there with that character. Like, and I also think people give Dawn a hard time. Like, Dawn, like, when you really think about, like, how she came to be, everything she's gone through, it's like, bruh, I'd be bratty too. Like, you know, she's a teenage girl, and instead of having to go through puberty, she has to go through, like, what her existence even means. But I think she's so interesting, and I can't even believe that they came up with that idea. That's so intelligent. I also am so excited to finally talk about why Riley sucks. Because, you know,
he's been the good guy.
No, you know when you have, like, a gut feeling, and you're like, this person sucks, but, like, everyone likes them, and everyone's like, no, they're so nice, and you're just, like, in your soul, you just know, like, this person is kind of, like, oh, like, there's just something about them. And then they do something, or some secret comes out about them, and you're like, I knew it. I've been saying it. That's how I feel about Riley in the fourth season, is like, you know, there's just, like, little things that he does, and you're like, oh, you're pissing me off, but then, like, some people really like him. And then you get to season five, and you're like, I freaking knew it. I freaking told you guys. Like, oh, I can't wait. It's gonna be so fun.
I feel like mainly Dawn, because I'm, like, a Dawn apologist. I feel like viewers tend to under-criticize or over-criticize TV characters. It's very rare that we get just, like, somewhere in the middle. I feel like when we're watching people on TV, we have this whole different high standard for them as a human being. But then if we see them as kind of morally gray, all of a sudden our bar is in literal hell. Like, when people watch Gossip Damon Girl.
Damon Salvatore.
I was literally thinking that. But I also, like, when you watch, like, Gossip Girl, it's like people automatically just forget that Chuck, like, sexually assaulted multiple girls in the first episode, and in the first season, and then just, like, sold his girlfriend for a hotel in season three, like, or whatever season that was. Like, it's just, he's a crappy person. But people, like, since they kind of view him as, like, morally gray, they just have, like, zero standards for them. And I'm like, babes, there has to be somewhere in the middle. Or there's people like Dawn that I'm like, guys, if we think realistically through the lens of her as an actual human being at the age they say she is, with the stuff that's happening to her, she's incredibly mature. Her little, like, tender tantrums here and there are usually because Buffy is, like, emotionally absent, because she also has a lot going on at the moment. And I'm like, you know what? Fair.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like, if they're attractive, if they're a guy, mostly a white guy, if they're a white guy that looks somewhat sad or is pining, instantly we'll forgive him for whatever else he's done. I'm totally
and
guilty
sexy,
of this.
And sexy, people for yeah, those things.
Yeah, sexy, sad. yeah. What's the third S? Sexy, sad, and sorrowful.
Sultry.
Sultry. Yeah. Something like that.
Sulking.
Sulking. Yes, that would be it. Sexy, sad, and sulking. But seriously, I think that there is just, I don't know, there's just not as much grace for a teenage girl that literally found out that she existed, you know, 2 weeks ago. You know, so I'm excited. I'm so excited to talk about her. Also, not to say that she's not annoying. She is annoying, but I
don't mind that, you know?
Right. I think that's realistic. Mm-hmm. Dawn is a realistic TV character, like, portraying the right age. All the Scoobies were a lot older than what they the age they were actually portraying. I'm really excited about looking at how Dawn reflects Buffy and Buffy reflects Dawn, and then talking about over the next few seasons how Dawn kind of grows out of Buffy's shadow. So I'm just so excited to talk about someone who is a reflection of Buffy that isn't someone that everyone is shipping her with, because everyone shipped her with Angel in season two, rightfully so. Season three was Faith. And while I didn't ship her with Buffy, a lot of people do. And then season four is Riley. And then season five, we finally have a non-love interest, and it creates this whole new dynamic to Buffy's relationships that we have not seen before. And that is good writing right there. All right, so let's just run through the list of foreshadowing just to get it out of the way. So we have Giles talking about leaving. He leaves in season six. But I gotta say, this is understandable. This I support wholeheartedly. Giles, you go have a life. Be free. Buffy is doing great. She's in a good place. She's probably thriving more than she ever has, like, in the past 3 years, since maybe season one. Like, she's doing really well. Giles leaving right now, Buffy would be okay. Giles leaving in season six, completely different story.
I don't know why they didn't choose to have him. Well, I guess because Anthony Stewart wanted to leave in season six, but I don't know why they didn't choose to write him out in season five. Like, it made a lot more sense, and then for him to come back in season six, you know?
I just don't buy the fact that she comes back from the literal grave, and then five episodes later, he's like, bye.
He's like, you need to learn to stand on your own two feet. Excuse me, she was like dead all summer. What do you expect?
For real. I think that's the most out of character thing that's ever happened in the show to me. Yes, I know what I said, and I stand by that.
Lies my parents told me.
No, but see, I actually kind of see where he's coming from.
Do I agree?
No, but it actually kind of makes sense in his character.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. That.
Do I like that they went there? No. but I'm saying, like, I see where they were going with it. And their friction in their relationship at that point. It made sense. I'm frustrated that they made it make sense. And especially I don't like that. End,
and there's no like repairing whatsoever. I don't know. Guys, that episode is probably one of the three, four episodes that I'm really dreading covering.
But I just don't want to see them like that. Like, I don't want to see them like that. That
episode at all. I really don't. But anyway, okay. So another foreshadowing is the reference to Joyce wanting a romantic life and how she's going to meet Brian and then instantly die that episode.
Oh, so sad. You're merciless.
Sorry, I'm just trying to rip the band-aid off, but I'm also trying to remind you guys.
She's like, remember when Joyce died, guys? Remember
on
when
the
Joyce
couch
dies?
You guys remember that?
Yeah, remember by the aneurysm, her dead you guys remember corpse that? It's just lying there and Buffy has to find it. Do you guys remember that?
This is just me trying to gently remind you guys that the body is this season and we have to talk about it. And remember how I was talking about a list of episodes that I'm dreading talking about? That would be one of them.
Yeah, only because it's just like perfection. How do you add to the body? Like, I will have nothing to say.
Yeah, I don't feel like I necessarily have anything to say because it really is so personal and everyone's going to take something different out of it.
Our analysis for the whole episode is we just record the audio of the episode on
and
top
sobbing
and then just
over it.
That. And then at the end, we all sign our names. We co-sign on it. We're like, yes, we approve this message.
Yeah.
We can't improve off of this.
A beautiful piece of television. And yeah, there'll be some things to talk about, but yeah. Okay, we'll get there when we get there. We are not there yet. Obviously, there's some stuff with Willow talking about, you know, how, you just have to have control when it comes to your magic life. And Willow this season is not going to have a ton of stuff to do. I know towards the end, we're going to have that epic moment where she comes at Glory with all of her power. But it is leading up to season six where she does lose control. Xander talking about not being anybody's butt monkey. We really start to see him flourish and grow this season. He really starts to solidify his relationship with Anya. They get engaged by the end of the season. And then we have him moving out into or looking for new apartments in the next episode. So,
you know, I think I've only seen his like twin episode twice and it's been years. Yeah. So I'm kind of excited to watch that one. I don't remember it.
Yeah, we went all of season four with no Xander-centric episodes. So I think we're kind of due. It's crazy. Debbie's like, are we?
I wouldn't say we're due. I would just say that there's probably going to be one.
They just needed to spread the love. They had three of them in season one and two-ish.
So many in season two and three.
In season two and then one in – yeah, they just needed to spread them out a little bit. All right, so one of the things I wanted to talk about. So Giles, in discussing Dracula, says, just be aware that he tends to develop a relationship with his prey. It's not enough for him to take her. She has to want to be taken. She has to burn for him. And this is so interesting, especially given that Buffy dies at the end of the season after wanting it. There's a very clear idea of Buffy choosing to jump, not only to save Dawn, but also because she's so tired. She just wants rest. She just wants peace from the burden of having to slay. And this is after her mom dying and all this other stuff. And then her having to claw her way back out of her own grave in season six, just like a vampire. Then she's different and she's afraid that she came back wrong and stuff. So this is similar to what Spike says in Fool for Love about the Slayer wanting to die. And he talks about how the two times he's killed a Slayer, that's what they wanted. Like, they basically got to that point where they were just like, I just want to die. I'm so like this burden of being the only chosen one and having to be alone and be so separated from everybody else in this world is just too much. And so we've always seen the act of biting from vampirism as a metaphor for sex and desire. And they are expanding that here with showing how Buffy is drawn to the darkness. And obviously there's a sexual element, but she is drawn to the death as well, not just Dracula. And I don't think Buffy wants to die here in this episode. I think they're intentionally showing she's doing great. She's going out to the movies with Riley. She's thriving. She's doing well. But they are setting up the idea of her wanting to die by the end of the season. And I don't know. It's just kind of heartbreaking to see where she is at the beginning of the season versus the end. And it's very, very different from any other season where typically Buffy starts off the beginning of the season very down and depressed. She did so in seasons 2, 3, and 4. And by the end of the season, she's in a really good place and she's super strong and powerful and just like has conviction in her life. And it's going to be very different in this next season.
I just was going to say, like, I feel like, I don't know if this is going to make any sense, but I view Buffy mentally in season 5 as reaching her burnout or already burnt out. And then season 6 is like she's past being burnt out and is void. You know when you just get like – I've been like this in times in my life where I've been either burnt out on like the job I'm in or my last semester of college, I literally like – I felt physically ill if I had to do homework. That's like not an exaggeration. Like I could not get myself to turn anything on time. Like everything was at least a day or two late because it was genuinely hard for me to sit down. I was taking like 22 units. I was working on top of that. I was trying to maintain like relationships. I had online classes. Like it was not fun. I imagine myself getting to that place, being Buffy in season 5, and then season 6 happening where you're forced to do it after that. And it's like you're literally like a shell of a person at the point. Like when people get to a burnt out moment in their life, after them being burnt out is literally just like a walking corpse. Like they're physically present, but they're not emotionally and mentally present. And that's season 6 of Buffy for me. Like that, it just, she makes absolute sense to me in season 6. And I think it's just hard for us to watch her like that when we've seen her so full of life. So I don't know. It's hard because Buffy goes through two very similar, but on different spectrums of hard in season 5 and season 6. It was like Buffy being burned out in season 5, but also at the same time understanding why she needs to do it and then getting to a place of her having that moment of being like, I can rest now. And it being her choice, which makes it beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then after having peace, it's like when you like, you make a decision for you that you're like, oh, this is what everything's been leading up for. And you're like, I get to quit my job. I get to never go back to school ever again. And it's like you feel like, and then all of a sudden a month later, they're like, okay, so you need to be back exactly where you were. Yet even the relationships you had to sustain you, keep you grounded are different now. Good luck.
Yeah. Season 5, she still has hope. Season 6, she's pretty much devoid of hope. She's just, the whole point is she doesn't feel anything. So it's also interesting talking about Fool for Love and about the Slayer wanting to die and all that stuff. It's interesting. There's a section of the script that's cut out in this episode where Buffy first meets Dracula. And, you know, he's kind of saying, do you know what a Slayer is and all this other stuff. And in the episode, she tells him, like, why don't you come over here and find out and stuff. There's a line that's cut out where Buffy asks Dracula, she's like, well, come over here. Do you want to dance or something like that? Not literally dance, but she refers to the act of fighting him as a dance, which is very similar to Spike referring to it as a dance. He says, that's all we've ever done to Buffy in Fool for Love. They're building up. And okay, so again with Spike, this is all building up towards the reveal that he's in love with her, or I guess I should say the better phrase would be infatuated with her in this season. And it's compared to Dracula's obsession with her, the whole one good taste moment and the idea of the dance, how the fight between a vampire and a slayer is inherently sexual. And then when he killed the slayer, it was only because they wanted to. Again, all this is leading up to that. And then I wanted to point out that this is the third but not final time that Buffy is bitten by a vampire. Technically, Spike doesn't bite her. He just tastes her blood from the cut in her arm in Sleeper. But it's really cool because Buffy's blood temporarily breaks the first's hold on him, which is really like, it's similar to what happens here in this moment with Dracula's thrall over Buffy. She's able to break it. So they're continually reinforcing this idea of power and of blood, and specifically of the Slayer's blood, which is going to be a really, really fun theme to like dissect and talk about as we continue on in the show. There will be more on that later, but first I want to talk about Riley. I know we kind of already like talked a little bit about him earlier, but so Riley being worried about which side of Buffy is resisting, you know, how Buffy's like, well, part of me is resisting. He's like, well, which part? I thought that was really interesting when we were talking about the episode, because originally I was like, oh, well, it's very clearly like the Slayer side of Buffy that is drawn to Dracula, and it's her human side that is resisting. And then I was like, oh, duh. By the time we got to the end of the episode, I realized it's the opposite, because they showed that Willow, that even Xander and Joyce are all drawn to Dracula. And even Anya talks about that too. But it is Buffy's blood that breaks the thrall. It is her Slayer side that allows her to not be taken in by him completely. And I think that says a lot about Riley. I think it shows that once again, Riley is not quite comfortable with Buffy's Slayer side. And they alluded to this in Restless with the Dream, like Riley calling her a killer. However, I am frustrated because I feel like the show portrays Riley inconsistently. And that's not to say that there weren't problematic elements of Riley in season 4, especially like early season 4. But I didn't get the sense that Riley was intimidated by Buffy. I mean, there was a whole situation in A New Man where he, like, the show went out of its way to show that Riley wasn't intimidated by Buffy, but that he was actually impressed by her power. However, they really start, like, they're starting to lean into it here, and they started leaning into it a little bit more in New Moon Rising when they were talking about his bigotry between like vampires and demons and humans. And then at the end of the episode, it's poo-pooed away as like, oh, we all have our moments. Like Buffy talks about how she kind of freaked when Willow came out to her. And they kind of like go back and forth and backpedal on Riley's character. Like, oh, I'm an anarchist. And then the next episode you have Riley over there being like, okay, killer. And you're like, well, which is it, Riley? So I'm curious on your guys' take. When we were like dissecting season 4, did you guys get the feeling that Riley was always intimidated by Buffy, now being able to look back? Or do you feel like they waffled back and forth like I feel? Or do you feel like it was something that he wasn't and then suddenly he was?
I feel like there was always a sense that he was jealous that she, not that she was like stronger than him, but she had an important role and he didn't.
You feel like that was always prevalent, or do you feel like that's just prevalent in this episode?
No, I feel like that's always been prevalent, because it's like he's always struggled with what it meant to be a Slayer. He always struggled taking orders from Buffy, from kind of like letting go and trusting her. Like, I think he just was so, for so long, was like the head guy. He was the one who made the calls. That it was like, and it's not about her being a woman. I don't think he's sexist in that way. I just think he struggles to not be the one making the calls, and it's hard for him because now he's like pretty much like a stay-at-home man.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, his wife is out making, you know, the moves, and I think that that really is hard for him, and I think that he struggles with it.
See, I don't know. I kind of see it as sexist a little bit, to be honest. I kind of view it as he is like, oh, I'm a feminist, yeah, I'm all for women empowerment, but then like it's all talk, but then like having his girlfriend be better at everything that he's always viewed himself as great as or whatever, that wasn't very well put together. I just really feel like it just like demasculated him, to be honest. Like, I always kind of viewed it too as like he kind of thought of it as like some sort of like a kink in the beginning of the relationship, the fact that she was like stronger, was hot to him, and he liked that. But it's not because he like respected Buffy in that sense, because he understood her. He's never fully understood her Slayer side, and I don't think you can really respect that part of somebody if you don't understand it. Or at least try to. Like, I just don't think he really, like, sat there and really tried to understand the type of power that she has. Or, I don't know, dude. I just, like, it gave me those vibes. That's my opinion. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think people are all over the map with him because the writers didn't make it clear, but they also just were inconsistent with him. Me, personally, I think that Riley truly did not start out feeling intimidated by Buffy. I think that from the Yoko factor on, there was a level of intimidation simply because everything was like, he was unsure of what was going on with the initiative. And so it was just like one more thing. But I really, like, we talked about it when we were doing the episode analysis for Buffy versus Dracula. We talked about how there were scenes in the script that were cut out that showed us that Riley is reacting more out of frustration that his own life is not moving forward than out of actual jealousy. But that by removing those scenes, it now just leaves jealousy as the only interpretation. And so they're once again watering him down to a one-dimensional character. And so I personally see that as proof that it's not so much of like insecurity at Buffy's power and like he doesn't have power. I think it's more Buffy has something in her life that is meaningful and full of purpose. It was kind of what Riley wanted to do too, but now he doesn't have that anymore. And so I think it all just stems from Riley's own insecurity on who he is and what his purpose is in life, you know? And obviously that stretches out to like all sorts of like their romantic life. And then he gets a little like, in Leah's words, sucky, sucky from vampires. Which the irony of Riley making fun of Giles for being with the vampire girls and only a few episodes later, he's in a demon
brothel.
Honestly,
so embarrassing. That is honestly so embarrassing. I forget that about his whole storyline because I feel like people, when they talk about Riley, don't bring that up. I'm like, babes, we can't ignore it if it's a multiple episode arc. Like, if you want to ignore like Wild at Heart, I get it. Yeah, I understand that. Character assassination. Also, it was his literal B-side. I can ignore that because that's not Oz. That's not Oz to me, you know? But like, it's a multiple episode arc and he keeps making the same decision. So like, we can ignore that. And I think I forget about it. And then it comes up and I'm like, oh my gosh, people keep talking about how he's such a good guy. But it's like, that's like a huge, well, first of all, in this world that is cheating, but also the metaphor is literally being sucked off. So it's like, you know, he literally is cheating either way.
Yeah, there's just no way of making it look better because you could say, okay, Angel, it's not actually Angel, it's Angelus. Xander wasn't actually Xander. It was Hyena Xander. Oz. It wasn't actually Oz. It was Werewolf Oz. What's Riley's excuse?
Just Riley.
Just Riley.
Right. Exactly. No, guys,
but he was so hurt. His girlfriend's mom was literally dying and also struggling with the fact that she has a new sister and she wasn't giving him, like, as much attention.
Enough attention. It just has Joss and Marty written all over it by the fact that Riley actually gaslights Buffy and says, no, Buffy, you need to decide whether you really like me or not. And like,
and she's Xander has this whole speech. I'm like, what was actually said, to be honest? I'm actually confused on what the epiphany of Buffy was in that moment.
That's going to be, yeah, that's going to be a real fun episode to watch. It was funny because I actually messaged one of our guests that came on last season and asked if they would like to come on for this season and was like, hey, is there any episode in particular you would like to talk about? And they were like, well, Into the Woods is interesting, but I don't know if I want to like touch all of that. And I was like, you kind of have to want to talk about that if you're going to come on for that. So no pressure. But with Riley, I just want to say we're looking at the theme of blood and how this season really, really delves into the power of blood because it's about family. So it's, you know, blood ties, which is, you know, that episode. But it continues on for the rest of the series, but it's never more prevalent than it is in this season. And blood is often equated with power or even knowledge as well as sexual fulfillment at times. Spike says blood is life. And I think it's interesting how the show does a misdirect with Buffy's blood, trying to show that there's darkness in her, leading her to think that she's incapable of loving when it's actually the opposite. But we have Dracula's obsession with Buffy's blood. We have Riley's like end up getting sucked off by vampires who drink his blood. We have Spike.
He feels like he's a lifeline for them. He feels like powerful.
He feels needed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have Dawn made from Buffy's blood. We have Glory searching for the key, which ultimately is Dawn's blood. Like, it all keeps coming back to blood. We have the whole Tara thinking that she has demon in her blood and her own blood family rejecting her because of it. And so it's going to be really, really fun as we go along this season talking a lot about that and how that it just keeps coming back to that. Ugh. Going to be so good. I love it when there's a very clear direction to a season and we're like, haha, I can tie it all back to this. It makes it so much easier to talk about.
Joyce's blood stops and the body, you know.
Oh my gosh, Tabby. Sorry. No.
Y'all, give Joyce a break. My gosh.
Well, I mean, Joss did give her a break. A very long one.
Lord.
The eternal break, if you'd really like to call it that.
All right. So in keeping with the idea about blood and it being synonymous with power and knowledge and how knowledge is a type of power, it can be used to control. And I talked a bit about this in the spoiler-free synopsis, but Buffy's blood is strong enough that she was able to release the master with her blood. But I think it's really, really interesting that Dracula actually tempts Buffy in this episode with more knowledge and more power by saying, hey, like, I can turn you and you'll know more, which it kind of feels like a biblical reference of like the serpent being like, hey, eat this fruit and you'll have the knowledge of both good and evil. But then we have season 7, The Shadow Men, The First Watchers. I think it's in one of those episodes with the shadow puppets and stuff. The First Watchers try to infuse Buffy with more of the essence of the demon because she comes to them seeking answers, but ultimately like seeking more power to destroy the First. But she rejects it just as she rejects it from Dracula here. So like there's like a repeated theme of that. So to wrap this all up, I was thinking about this after we finished recording our last episode and kind of was like mulling over what we were going to talk about for spoilers. And I just had like this moment of clarity because I've always really struggled with how does season 4 tie into season 5? Because like we've said before, it's very convoluted. It's hard to figure out which direction it's going, what the themes are, and how it all ties in to season 5. But Restless, I feel, especially kind of gave me a little bit more of a clear picture. Season 4 was all about not suppressing your nature, instead embracing it and asserting your identity. Well, the twist for season 5 and what makes season 5 so freaking good is for Buffy, What if your true nature is actually darker and more terrifying than the monsters you've been chosen to face? What if you're the actual monster? And I think about how she talks about figuring it all out in The Gift and how beautiful it is that she tells Dawn to tell Giles, I figured it out. And she figured out that I'm not actually a monster, that that darkness that I thought that's inside of me, that Slayer side, can actually be used for good and to love other people because it's not controlling me. I'm in control of it because, you know, there's always that existential message. But I just think that lead into season 5 is so good. And we see that in this episode where Buffy's like, I don't know what's inside of me. And we've been told to embrace our natures, but what if my nature is not good? So I think that's pretty great. Well, that is all we have for our spoiler section for Buffy versus Dracula. We have so much more to talk about in the coming episodes. I'm so excited to kind of like talk about Glory when she shows up and start really addressing Dawn as the situation calls for it. So thanks so much for listening, you guys. We appreciate your support and we will see you next time.